Whispering Streets. And here is Betty Davis.
Hello. One phrase echoes around the whispering streets of the world. At one time or another, we hear it. He saved others. Himself he could not save. It's the most tragic of all phrases. As Dr. Clark Denton walked into his office, his head was bent and his shoulders were curved. A mask dangled from his hand. He slung it into a corner and sank down into an easy chair and buried his face in his hands. Ellen Winthrop, his nurse, rose quietly and walked to his side and laid her hand on his shoulder.
I'm sorry, Doctor.
You've heard?
They phoned down from the operating floor. There's nothing I can say except... I'm sorry.
His mother died when he was a week old. I couldn't save her. He's all I've had to love for 7 years, Ellen. I couldn't save him.
You shouldn't have done the operation on your own child. You should have let someone else do it. Then you wouldn't have blamed yourself.
I'm the best in the field. I saved hundreds of children who've had the same condition, Ellen. But I couldn't save my own son. Smiled at me when they gave him the anesthetic, spinal. I insisted on a spinal so that I could reassure him while the operation was going on. He had an answer for everything I said, Ellen. And then he stopped answering. I couldn't believe it.
Lanny was never strong. He caught everything so easily. All the children's diseases.
Children's diseases, mumps, measles, chicken pox, whooping cough. But when something real came along, I couldn't save him. We did everything. Oxygen tank, adrenaline to the heart, everything. But I couldn't save him. Ellen, will you help me out of this gown?
Oh, yes. Stand up, Doctor. There now. I'll get your coat. It's in the closet.
My coat and my top coat, Ellen.
You're going out?
Yes.
Home?
No.
May I go with you?
No.
Where are you going, Doctor?
I haven't the vaguest idea. I only know that I'm not coming back to this office.
You're not coming back? Well, but you have 4 operations scheduled for tomorrow.
Someone else can do them.
But you'll be back day after tomorrow.
I'm through with surgery, Emma.
But you can't be through with surgery, Doctor. Clark, it's your whole life.
I couldn't save my own son, so what good am I?
Maybe if Lanny'd lived, he'd have been a crippled or... Well, there's reasons for these things. Clark, there was a reason for his being born and a reason for his dying and...
What reason?
Well, I'm not wise enough to know. Neither are you. Oh, if there were anything on earth that I could do to help,
I know. Ellen, you stuck by me through thick and thin. Ever since... How long have we been together, Ellen?
Since before you were married. I was with you the day Lanny was born. I was with you until dawn the night your wife died. We walked the streets together. If I could be with you now, Clark, until the worst ache is past, until you come back to normal...
I'm perfectly normal now, Ellen, as normal as I'll ever be, that is. You can give my instruments to that young chap who's so poor, you know, the intern who can't afford to buy good ones. What's his name? I can't remember.
Oh, I'll do no such thing. You'll come back to your job... To me, Clark. Oh, Clark.
Thank you for kissing me goodbye, Ellen. I'll be pushing off now. It's good to know that somebody gives a hang about... I'll write you a reference. I'll mail it to
you. Oh, you needn't. I'll be waiting here until you get back. I'll keep up your day book and send out the bills and bank the checks.
You'll have a long wait, my dear.
I'll be waiting. If it's forever.
That's ridiculous. I've already told you that this is goodbye.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again, but first...
There are many isms in the world of today, some good, some bad. But there is one ism there can never be enough of, humanitarianism. Here's a little episode illustrating how a United States Air Force sergeant and his wife combined a bit of humanitarianism with Americanism. and how, even though handicapped by a language barrier, their efforts worked out very well. It all happened on a dingy street in Fukuoka, Japan. A Japanese couple suddenly dashed out into the street, the woman clutching a baby in her arms. The couple signaled frantically, but the traffic flowed by, ignoring their efforts for help. Finally, one car came to a stop. The occupants were Tech Sergeant Oliver A. Morris and his wife, out to enjoy a late afternoon and evening off duty. What moved Sergeant Morris to stop? Later he found that hard to explain, unless perhaps it just seemed the human thing to do, for neither he nor his wife knew any Japanese. Yet those pathetic figures in the street somehow conveyed great distress and urgency. Sergeant Morris sensed there was something to be done and in a hurry. Much later he learned the baby had been seized with convulsions. The parents had rushed to a small hospital nearby, and its only doctor was out. They knew of another physician a mile and a half away, and were trying to flag down a taxi when Sergeant Morris came along. The airman bundled them into his car and sped off in their search for a doctor, whom they finally succeeded in locating. When the spasms of the baby were finally checked, the woman looked up with brimming eyes and said, as an interpreter translated, "My husband and I, we have been afraid of Americans before. Now we are glad to know such fine people." It cost the Morrises much of the carefree evening they had previously planned, but their unselfish actions towards that Japanese family brought a feeling of goodwillism that will never be forgotten. Sergeant Morris and his wife also gave all of us a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America.
Back to our story with Betty Davis.
So Dr. Clark Denton walked out of his office and made his way down the street to the garage in which he kept his car. He asked the garage attendant to fill it up with gas and oil and climbed in and started off down the road. He drove all day, stopping once for gas and oil, but not to eat. He was almost glad when a storm came up in the late afternoon. The driving rain beating against the windshield reflected his mood. It grew darker and darker, and he drove faster and faster. And suddenly there was a little click, and the car began to slow down and stopped. And Clark swore and climbed out and lifted up the hood.
I guess I know even less about cars than I do about surgery. Here I am at the end of nowhere and...
The rain was dripping from his hat, streaming down his suddenly gaunt face. And there, straight ahead, perhaps the distance of two city blocks, he saw a sign that read, "Mike Melton's Place, Gas, Oil, and Repairs." So he closed the hood and leaned into the car and took out the ignition key and started off down the road toward the sign. When he came close, he realized that it was scarcely more than a shed with a lean-to in back of it. Only a couple of gasoline pumps in front gave it dignity and purpose. He went to a closed door and knocked on it. And knocked again.
Yes. You knocked?
Yes, something's wrong with my car. It's up the road away. I'm not out of gas. Tires are all right. Something happened. I don't know what. There was a click. Nothing more, and the car stopped. If you're a mechanic and come with me and look it over...
Oh, but there isn't any mechanic. My husband runs this place alone, and he's away at the moment. Several customers have come in the last hour, but I've told them all about my husband being away, and we're not open for business.
Oh, will your husband be back soon?
I pray heaven he will be. She's that sick. If he doesn't come back soon, it'll be too late. She's rambling now. She can't seem to make sense. She says mommy over and over, but... she doesn't know when I speak to her.
She? Who's she?
My little girl. She was taken sick so suddenly. I don't know what to do. Mike drove to town for the doctor. He should be back any minute now, but... oh, come inside, mister, while I see who's on the phone. And maybe Mike. Come inside, please, and close the door so the rain won't splash in.
Very well.
Hello? This is... Oh, Mike. Mike, honey. No, she's worse.
Oh, Mike.
But when will he be back, dear?
Oh, Father in heaven.
Well, then you come home. Come home right away. Leave a note for him and come home fast.
Mike, I need you.
Doctor's out on a confinement case. Goodness knows how long it'll be before he's through. Goodness alone knows. We need a doctor right now, right this minute. I'm sorry I can't help you, mister. There's another garage about a mile from here. I've got to get back to her, to Joan.
How old is your little girl?
Oh, 7. Going on 8.
Just Lanny's age. May I see your child, Mrs.?
Oh, I'm Mrs. Milton.
Oh, yes, of course. I saw the name on the sign, Mike Milton's place. May I see your child?
Oh, why do you want to see her?
I've had some experience with children.
I don't understand it. Follow me. She's out back. This way, mister. Such pain. Here's Mommy, Joan. Here's Mommy, dearest.
Mommy. Mommy. Make it stop hurting, Mom.
Yes.
Did the pain come suddenly?
It came on her awful sudden. Why are you staring at her, mister?
She reminds me of another child. Stand aside. I'll examine her.
What do you know about...
Please. Now, Joan... I'll try not to hurt you. I just want to touch you. Here.
Don't. Leave her be.
Stop talking. This is important. Joan, does it hurt you here?
Oh, it hurts.
And here? It's very serious. You must get her to a hospital.
You're a doctor.
I was a doctor. Put cold compresses on that very sore place. Do you happen to own an ice bag?
No.
Then wrap ice cubes in a Turkish towel and have your husband drive her to the nearest hospital.
Mom! Joan!
Mister, she's gone. Look at her face.
Get out of my way so I can take her pulse. She isn't dead. She still has a pulse. It's shallow, but... How far away is the nearest hospital?
There isn't one for 30 miles.
It wouldn't be possible to drive her that far. She should be operated on immediately.
But who? You will do it. The Almighty sent her to us in our hour of need.
That's not so.
Doctor, you will do it. Oh, God. Do you have any instruments or anesthetic?
Every doctor carries an emergency kit in the back of his car, but I can't do it, I tell you. I tell you, I can't. It'd be asking too much of me. It'd be more than flesh and blood could bear.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back.
The framers of our Constitution had a hard fight on their hands to get it accepted and had to defeat several arguments against it. Here's a part of a reply by Alexander Hamilton in 1788... regarding the small number of representatives in Congress. The number at the outset will be 65. However, every 10 years, a census will be taken, and representatives will be sent to Congress at the rate of 1 for every 30,000 persons. At the computed rate of increase, in 25 years, the number of representatives will amount to 200, and in 50 years, to 400. This, I presume, will put an end to all fears arising from the smallness of the body. Yes, Alexander Hamilton and the other men who framed the Constitution did so not only for themselves, but for the future. We today are that future.
And now, back to our story with Betty Davis.
Clark Denton stood there staring into the eyes of the haggard woman who stared back at him. The little girl lying on the bed might have been dead already. She was so still. And then suddenly her arm moved and her hand clenched and unclenched and stretched appealingly toward the doctor. And all at once he spoke.
Have you a kitchen table?
Yes.
Plenty of clean sheets and towels?
Yes.
I have gloves in my bag. Put water on the stove, plenty of water, and bring it to a boil. Well, fill every pan and kettle in the kitchen with water and... What's that?
That's my husband's pickup truck. I know the sound.
Hurry outside and send him up the road to my car. Here are the keys. Tell him to open the trunk and bring me the black bag that he'll find there. Tell him to hurry.
Right.
Tell him there's not one instant to lose.
Yes.
Have you any very strong electric light bulb?
Yes, doctor. Mike, I'm coming. There's something you gotta do.
Can bear much more. Dr. Clark Denton repeated the words over and over again in his heart as he prepared the little body for the operation. When the child's father came back with the bag, Clark opened it and sterilized his instruments and gloves and laid them on a clean towel. But his hands were trembling as he slipped on the rubber gloves, and the father started to pace up and down nervously.
Mrs. Melton, take your husband out of the room and then hurry back. He's not needed here, but you are. And you must be calm and controlled.
I will be. I promise.
You'll have to assist me, even though you are her mother.
Yes. Come with me, Mike.
Shut him out and close the door.
You'll save her, even though you're scared.
Scared? Yes, for the first time in my life, I'm scared. It's Lanny's face that's peering at me from the shadows. Lanny's reproachful eyes. I must give her the anesthetic slowly. Very slowly. With my stethoscope against her heart.
Very slowly. Stethoscope against her heart. Who is Lanny? And why is he looking at you reproachfully?
My son. I couldn't cure him.
He'll start smiling if you save another child's life.
Perhaps. Have your scalpel, the one that's at the far end of the towel. And I think you better turn your back for a minute.
Why?
I'll need you later. If you faint now, it'll be just too bad for Joan.
Hands that had been unsteady, growing magically steady. Eyes that had shifted away from duty, becoming intent with purpose. Genius unclouded by memories. God-given genius. 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 3/4 of an hour. And then the doctor sighed and spoke to the trembling woman who stood beside him.
Hand me that roll of tape now. The operation's over. I've put you through an ordeal which you'll never forget, but...
What?
We've won, Mrs. Melton. The operation was a success. And the patient lived.
Oh. Here's the tape, Doctor. Take it, quick.
Thanks. Sit down, Mrs. Melton. You can afford to faint now. But I can't afford to leave my patient just yet.
There wasn't much wrong with the car. Clark Denton turned it back toward the city in the watery dawn. The sun was up, a pale sun, but even so it was shining as he parked in front of the hospital in which he'd operated on Lanny. He went up to the floor that was given over to doctor's offices. He walked into the foyer of his own suite and threw his coat across a chair and turned toward the waiting room and stopped short, for he heard voices.
Well, I'm
Ellen Winthrop,
so sorry.
And another.
I realize that it's an emergency, Mrs. Abbott, but Dr. Denton won't be in today.
Will he?
He'll be in tomorrow. I'm afraid not. He'll be away for an indefinite period. Well, don't look so stricken. There are other doctors.
But this is an unusual situation, and I've heard that Dr. Denton can work miracles.
Well, I think so, but...
Dr. Denton, I didn't expect to see you.
I know.
This is Mrs. Abbott, Doctor.
How do you do, Mrs. Abbott?
How do you do, Doctor?
And will you take Mrs. Abbott into my private office, Miss Winthrop, and then come back?
Oh, yes, Doctor. Come along, Mrs. Abbott. This way. Take a comfortable chair. You won't have long to wait.
Thank you.
I feel as though I'm dreaming, Clark.
You're not dreaming.
You were going away
for good.
For good or evil, but the good one. I'm back to stay.
It's morning. You have four operations scheduled for today.
And I'll be able to do them all. Ellen, you're crying.
The expression on your face. That's why I'm crying. It's so uplifting, so peaceful. Oh, Clark.
You kissed me goodbye last night, Ellen. If you'll kiss me again now. We've been together so long, Ellen, working, that I'd almost forgotten you were a woman. Until now.
And genius conquered despair. For a doctor's job is more than a job. It's a sacred trust. And when a doctor realizes that fact, honestly and completely, he's very close to divinity. Mrs. Abbott, the woman who was talking to Ellen Winthrop and Clark, walked back into his office, had an emergency to discuss with him. But it was an off-the-beaten-track emergency. Asking yourselves is an off-the-beaten-track emergency that would bring a woman at a very early hour to a surgeon's office. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Streets.
The program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Gigi Pearson, and Ed Prentice. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is John Wall.
Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.